You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
It's the Cooligans, stupid.
Hey, another Cooligans episode!
Where are we in the building, yo? What's good, everybody? Welcome.
It's the Cooligans, buddy.
Look at that.
Look at that.
We were doing a little... tech test, bro. Making sure all the buttons are working.
Remember that A-Rap Music used to do? That's not that impressive. We just did it, bro. Remember Kanye making his own beat?
Let's go. Okay. What is it? Al-Hilal is involved in the A-Rap Music.
Yeah. By the way, the Saudi League just bought A-Rap Music for 458 million euros.
I mean, it's a good track. Yeah. Was it Busta Rhymes?
No. There's a producer called A-Rap Music.
But there was a song. Busta Rhymes made a song called...
Yeah, we get getting A-Rap money.
We get A-Rap money.
Which upsets people. Did you know that?
Yeah. We like to bring up things that upset people. Hello, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerrero.
We have a hot show today. Very sizzling, not just because it's hot shot right here.
But get your hand off of it, Christian. It's a hot show.
I got third degree burns. No, because we have an incredible guest. We have Franklin Leonard, the creator of The Blacklist. He will be joining us to discuss the writer's strike.
Not the show. There's a show called Blacklist.
There is a show called The Blacklist.
I'm not going to lie. When Christian first told me, I was like, yo, I love Raymond Reddington. He's the best villain on TV.
This is a good show.
The Blacklist is an organization to basically get screenplays that are written by people to actually have them read and sort of peer-reviewed and then eventually made into films. And there have been a couple that Franklin Leonard, he created this organization and films have actually come of it, which is a pretty good...
It's a good track record.
It's a good track record.
Business, when the thing you say can happen, happens.
A lot of times, nobody reads your trash. But they will read it and let you know if it's good. Okay, so Franklin Leonard also happens to be, an obsessive footy fan like we are.
Big football fan, great guy. Can't believe we know someone of his ilk.
Exactly. So we talked to him about a lot of important subjects.
You think he would join our cabinet in Blangola? He'd be the smartest guy for sure.
I feel like he would oppose to a lot of the ideas we come up with. That's how smart he is.
Might be a tad overqualified, to be honest, but I don't want to help
you. In fact, because of that, you're banned from Blangola, dude. Okay. Don't come in here with your genius.
We're going to be talking to him in a moment. And as always, a reminder, thank you for tuning in. Please hit the subscribe button if you're watching on YouTube. Subscribe if you're listening to this podcast, or if you know sometimes you need to consume this podcast in different ways. Maybe you Mondays you're into YouTube, maybe Thursdays you're into Apple.
Yeah,
mix it up. Okay,
buddy, remember Stitcher? You know, you can do whatever you want, bro. You can get us in so many different places.
All right, so just have fun with it, okay? Yeah. We're not...
Who's stopping you?
Don't be monogamous to one platform.
Nah, go get freaky, yo.
Okay, that's all we're about here. Just don't tell our wives.
Yeah, just slowly press a button on a different app, you know?
So, feel free to do that. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts and 5 stars on Spotify. Before we get to Franklin's
wonderful interview.
We have Hotshot here. So we were trying to think of what would be fun to do. So I don't know if people have obviously seen this. Hotshot is a cramp prevention.
But it uses your brain.
Okay.
There's nothing in here that stops cramps, but this tricks your brain into not cramping your leg.
Did Franklin Leonard invent this?
You know, why too smart, bro.
Why are you so smart, bro?
How are you not afraid of this, but you're afraid of the vaccine? This tricks your brain. How do we know there's not a chip in this liquid, bro?
We're not talking about Franklin specifically.
Yeah, no. I meant you.
Yeah. The royal you.
You, the listener. No.
Franklin's cool.
Franklin's cool. Franklin will just tell you he's going to put a chip in your brain, and it would sound like a good idea. That's how smart he is.
I say no to that, man.
If he's like, you need this chip, I'd be like, oh,
so
is it a Dorito?
We've seen the several NWSL players
freak out,
have this hot shot because they were cramping late in the game.
I took it.
Yes, you
took
it. I took
this yesterday on Morning Footy, and it was fine.
You didn't have much of a reaction.
I didn't have any reaction. I don't believe I should have lost.
Okay.
I lost to Jenny because she just stood there.
Yeah.
She
Jenny
did know the assignment, which was to not react. Meanwhile, I'm like, well, I'm just going to be super casual about it. So, and I'm moving stuff around.
So Alexis has had it. I have not had it. But this is...
But you are also a little less...
I'm less... Alexis.
Hot sauce,
spice tolerant.
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten better with it over time, mm-hmm. but I'm definitely, it's not my go-to.
No, but you do like some spice.
Yes.
You're just not like, let me get the jet fuel 55 billion. Can I have that on my burrito?
But I remember, I mean, when we first started working together, I don't think I could tolerate spice as much.
Remember Flama? We would throw all the peppers in the water. And remember that time we blended up McDonald's and Christian goes, it's too thick. Let's add water. I go, no, it's going to be like, and then all the oil rose to the top. It made me so sick. It was so disgusting.
It was awful. So this is what we're going to do because we're obviously going to talk to Franklin Leonard in a moment, but we have to remind people that they have to chill, and we're going to chill.
But also League's Cup is coming up. People might get cramps.
They might get cramps in
League's Cup.
You might get cramps
jumping up and cheering for League's Cup. So before we talk about how you and I are going to chill, why don't we do it while immediately having drank. And you got to shoot the whole thing.
That's the plan.
You shook yours?
Oh, I didn't shake anything.
Close it up and shake it a little bit.
Okay. All right, here we go.
We literally have no time. And he's like, yeah, let me just.
All right, there.
You ready?
So it's a juice. I thought it was like a.
I thought it was more. It's more viscous than you think.
Okay.
Oh, there's a term.
Bottoms up, Coors Light, baby. Let's go.
Are you ready?
All right.
So, hey, what do you drink when you chill watching League's Cup?
an ice cold Coors Light. Uh-huh. But before that, I have one of these. All right.
Ice cold Coors Light. The actual mountain.
Oh my God, it's so much. Why is it so much?
The mountain, it turns blue when the can is cold. Right, Christian?
Right. And that's what's going to happen. During the League's Cup, because we're obviously going to see Lionel Messi play his first game July 21st against Cruz Azul. And I'm excited about that because I know I'm going to be watching with an ice cold Coors Light.
Yeah. And just like Christian said, ice cold Coors Light is, I think, the most refreshing. It's literally the beer that's made to chill, even in the heat of summer soccer.
Okay.
Like League's Cup.
Even in the heat of my mouth right now.
Yeah. In fact, what's one thing you think would quench your mouth right now?
A nice ice cold Coors Light with the blue mountains right on it. So
that's right.
This summer, stay passionate and stay refreshed with an ice cold Coors Light, the official beer of League's Cup 2023.
That's right.
Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/hooligans.
That's CoorsLight.com/hooligans. Yeah, that's right. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Bro, Christian's face after he took
the hiccup was the best.
Why did so much come out of there? That was my surprise. It's not too spicy. It's not too crazy, but it does do its job though,
which is like shock your
system. But those were genuine hiccups, so it got me a little bit. All right. Let's go. Let's chat with Franklin Leonard, man, the homie. Let's talk some footy. Let's talk about the ongoing writer strike. So some important topics covered with him. So here goes. Here's our conversation with Franklin Leonard.
Wow.
Now we gotta be buttoned up. We gotta be a bit proper because
I'm glad you and I wore our suits for this.
Because our next guest
is a CEO. And not like when your friends start a website and call themselves CEO. It's like a for real CEO.
That's right. Because, you know, I honestly think they're giving out LLCs a little too easily. There should be a couple more, you know, barriers of entry.
My buddy owns stolengoods.com. I just don't think it's a smart business idea.
You know, but he won't listen to us. You know?
Empires have been built on stolengoods.com.
That's a great point.
Well said.
The voice you're hearing, I mean, an impresario, can we say that?
I mean, it's going to sound very regal. But no, this man is just someone whose work I admire and just does a bunch of amazing, just amazing contributions to the film industry, television industry, and then
accidentally changed the way film is made.
Exactly, right?
And when we started this podcast, this was not the caliber of human being we thought we would ever be speaking to on the show.
So, and then on top of that, on top of all he has accomplished, he's also a football degenerate like we are.
Hey, you got to have a toxic trait, my friend.
Okay.
That is definitely mine. You can ask my wife.
We found our people. Thank you so much for joining us, Franklin Leonard, the creator of The Blacklist. Thank you so much for joining us on The Cooligans. How you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. I'm really excited to be here. This is, I think this is my like first podcast appearance as a degenerate football fan. And so I'm excited.
Long overdue. Okay, yeah, this is your intervention. So I'm glad we scheduled it at the same time as this interview. But Franklin, no man, there's a couple things we want to talk about. Obviously,
let's start with your connection to soccer, football. Your brother played professionally.
He did. New England Revolution left back, if I'm not mistaken.
You should know the position.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. So, I mean, I think he was a multi-tool player, if you will. A Zinchenko before Zinchenko, maybe.
Okay.
No, but like he was like under 17 national team, 4-year starter at UVA, played in the Revolution for a couple of years, and now he's a doctor. So, you know,
doctor.
I mean, it's a
lateral
like a
real
move,
life
right?
Grey's Anatomy character. It's ridiculous.
How much of a disappointment is it now that he's a doctor and no longer a soccer player? No, what an incredible shift of gears.
Well, I think the basic story is he popped his Achilles in his last season for the Revolution. That was pretty
much
the
end of his
career.
And he was like, I got it.
Nobody, physios, get out of here.
If I'm not mistaken, he asked the doctor if it was possible for them to set it up so that he could watch his own surgery live.
Damn,
right,
bro.
Like, and then went and did his pre-med courses like after college, went to med school, and he's an emergency room physician.
Wow, that's like when I go to a sandwich shop, and I'm like, let me see you make the sandwich.
Yeah, no, but exactly. No, but like both of my siblings are ridiculously impressive human beings, and people are always like, "Oh, your parents must be so proud of you." And I'm like, "Ish." Let me tell you about my younger brother and sister. So yeah,
wow.
Well, my personal love of the game. I played. My dad was stationed in Germany. The first, you know, sort of team sport that I ever played was football. We moved back to Georgia. I kept playing. I played in high school. Would like to think that I was decent, but was not the best player in my family. I literally wrote my college admissions essay about what it was like being that much worse than my younger brother at soccer. But then I think I fell in love with the game in the 98-2002 World Cups, right? The 98 was the Lilian Thuram year, and he was sort of my hero. And then 2002, I was living in New York, and I would just go to restaurants of the various nationalities that were playing to watch the matches. And the games were really late at night, so it was like, you know, late night Koreatown for the penalty kicks. And I was like, yeah, I'm in. Like, I see why people care about this in the way that they do, and like, what a great way to like experience the world.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time of just like, what was the thing that got you hooked, you know? I mean, it's either a World Cup. For me, it was the FIFA video games.
That
definitely helps
too.
Yeah, without a doubt. This is off topic, but you just mentioned doctors, and because you work in film and TV, have you been seeing those viral clips of the good doctor that go around on Twitter? Do you know this show? Do you know the show?
I know the show. I've seen a few of the clips. I have not watched the show yet.
I have not watched the show either, but it is essentially it's like a Doogie Howser type show, like a young doctor, but I guess he's like on the spectrum, and he's also married, and it's just, it's the most uncomfortable combination of like a drama. Like if you were writing this script, it's one of those, there's the podcast, How Did This Get Made? That is one of those shows that feels a little bit like, how did this get made? It is wildly strange.
Yeah, was this script on the good, on the blacklist?
This script was not on the blacklist. We tend to do deal more in film. The wild thing about that show, I think it's a remake of, I want to say, a South Korean show that was very popular there. It's definitely a remake. I'm not positive about South Korea, but what's amazing about it beyond that, look, there is something compelling about like having a doctor who's just going to tell you the truth, right? Like, who's just like, yeah, man, you're going to die. Like, it's a wrap, you know, instead of being like, I have some bad news for you. Your test results weren't good. And I think that's probably where the drama comes. It's like everybody's dealing with these like really like pitched emotions. And this dude just cuts through it all. And it's just like, yeah, man, you're an idiot. Like, you did this to yourself. You got 12 hours. You better make peace with your God and your family.
I think that is the part that makes it feel so unbelievable. And that's why every single clip goes viral on Twitter, because everybody's like, who would do this? No one would do this.
I've not seen this yet. I got to watch it.
You got to see it. It's very, very strange. Anyway, okay. I do want to talk. We'll get back to footy in a second, but I want to talk about the writer strike. Because obviously we're comedians. We have a lot
so
of
many friends.
We have a ton of friends that work on so many shows. I mean, I bumped into Carrie Cottett just the other day. Yeah. She was at a striking Amazon, their offices. But from the film perspective, and even from the actors' perspective, because I know a lot of actors have been getting involved as well. But what is this scenario like for you, a filmmaker, and being in such a? I mean, it sucks because people can't work. But you obviously, when it comes to writing and the importance of it, and a lot of people like Adam Conover also, who's also been on the show, who really kind of breaks down a lot of the specifics of everything going on. But from your perspective, how do you see this playing out so far?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm in kind of a weird situation because the company that I built, The Blacklist, specifically focuses on like supporting and amplifying like great screenwriting to the industry. So we're like advocating for writers as a community, and then individual writers and individual scripts. And we sort of exist in a in-between space between the studios and writers, right? And I think anybody who wants to understand like what the stakes of the strike are should go listen to Conover and all the many places that he is, because he breaks it down far better than I'm ever going to. But the basics of it are this, right? The studios want to extract as much money as humanly possible from the people that are working for them. Writers, in particular, are a profoundly undervalued part of the process of making films and television, right? Like, no one can do anything until writers do their jobs, right? Like, directors got nothing to shoot, actors have nothing to say, production designers have nothing to production design, and yet they're still very much at the sort of bottom of the proverbial hierarchy in terms of, like, collecting a bag for the work that they're doing. And the reason everybody else gets to collect a bag is because of them. And so as long as the industry's existed, they've gotten a raw deal. There are increasing forces like AI, like the reduction in size of writers' rooms that are making it really impossible for writers to sustain a career, even if you're getting consistent work, right? Like, if you're writing on 4 shows in a year, like, you should probably be able to, like, afford a reasonably comfortable living. And so that's, like, those are the stakes for the writers. I think the bigger stakes for all of us, and like, let's say you don't know any screenwriters, let's say you don't care about screenwriters, you don't care about Hollywood, you're like, everybody's trash out there anyway, like, why do I care if a writer gets $100,000 or $150,000 to write on a TV show? If there are no writers, and if writers can't like afford to live or afford to move to LA to try to get a job as a writer, all of the movies and TV that we're going to have to watch, whether you care about Hollywood or not, is going to be trash. And so for me, like, everybody should be on the side of the writers, unless you're a corporate C-suite executive at a AMPTP signatory company. Because the upside for the rest of us is better movies, better TV, and real talk, more money for the industry if writers get what they want. Now, it may not all go in the CEOs of these companies' pockets, but everybody is going to be getting much bigger bags if writers win this fight. And we get,
I have an idea. What if we used AI to find a way to go around
these businesses. You feel me?
No, I don't.
So now we get the writers to use AI. Hey, AI, I don't know if that's how you do it. Maybe that's Allen Iverson who'll pop up if you do that. Mm-hmm. We go to ChatGPT and say, hey, build me a website that streams, content.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right, right. Just a whole media network.
Use their weapon against them. Steven Seagal, another great actor, has taught us to do.
Well, the funniest part is, right, like, fundamentally, it would be easier for AI to replace a CEO than it would be to replace a screenwriter right now.
Of course.
Like, real talk, an AI can sort of gobble up the data that a CEO has to make a decision a hell of a lot faster than they are going to write Succession.
Yeah.
Right. I'm worried about this time, right, because I remember the last... strike. The last strike happened, I think, the year I started doing stand-up comedy. And, my dream was, my main focus was, I was writing monologue jokes for years. I was trying to get on a late-night show, and the struggle, I used to write, like, 20 monologue jokes a day. And I was just like, this was my practice to kind of break into that industry. And then I would hear from, Anthony Jeselnik was a monologue joke writer on Fallon.
Fallon, yeah.
And he helped me out once, and he gave me like a recommendation to submit to Fallon. And when I found out, they have to write like 100 monologue jokes a day. And so at that point, and the 20 I wrote, I had a full-time job, and I'm writing these 20 jokes. And it's like, bro, this is like this is actual labor that I had a newfound respect for writers, just especially joke writers, because it is such an intense job. And then what's sort of happening now is just like this demonizing of writers, which is like as if there's some elite class of people. Right.
Right. Are you one of those scribes? Sorry, exactly. Where's your yacht park?
It's such a strange
look,
thing,
man,
to
LaCroix,
see.
LaCroix is expensive.
Yeah.
Especially, look, if you want like a good vintage of LaCroix, man, like that's expensive stuff.
Ooh, is that Pamplemousse 2022?
Exactly. So it's like my other concern is that during that last strike, the absolute trash television that came during and after it, I only have to mention Heroes. Did you ever watch Heroes, the show Heroes?
Oh, no. I thought you were going to tell us your heroes during that time.
No, this show that was on NBC that was amazing. It was about like superheroes. And at the time,
I was going to say the first season of Heroes was dope. People loved it. I thought you were going to talk about like that was bad. And I was like, hang on.
That wasn't bad. But
they had like real issues, like human issues.
Yeah,
right?
But that powers and stuff like that. Yeah. And it was like, you know, save the cheerleader or whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
then
that's
the
right.
Writer strike hit and that show got demolished, destroyed. It was just like literally the producers were like, all right, well then he's going to kiss her. And, literally you could tell they were just patching it together on screen. And then on top of that, we got reality TV. Reality TV exploded in that time. And it's really probably why we have like shows like Jersey Shore and all this other stuff. And there was just so much.
Finally, good TV, right, Franklin? Jeez.
So what is what are the repercussions of this this strike? Because now we have so many more streaming platforms and so many outlets for content. What is the content going to look like after this strike?
I mean, if I'm being honest, it's not going to be good for a little bit, right? The things that you're looking forward to coming back this fall ain't going to be there. Right. And there's going to be some trash television in its place. So again, like, we want writers to be able to do what they do the best versions of it and get compensated appropriately for it, for them, but also for us. So we can watch look, I'm a bit of a homebody, right? Like, if I'm not watching football, I'm probably at home and I'm probably watching movies and television. And I would just like that stuff to be good.
Yeah. I think the worst case scenario would be if they all started to do soccer podcasts. Please no.
Don't pivot. Don't
please
pivot.
No. Leave us alone.
I mean, look the numbers may be up for football this fall because there's no television to watch. Now, granted, it's not like competitive with like evening television, but maybe MLS. I don't know.
Hey. Also, from your perspective, from someone in this business, do you think this creates a shift where we've seen so many other industries use social media to sort of detail, the behind the scenes or the day in the life of yada, yada, yada. Do you think this is what happens with writers? Do you think they start maybe YouTube channels or TikTok channels that kind of propel themselves a bit more to the front lines or to the, you know, visually?
It's a really interesting question. I actually think that writers would be well served by, you know, establishing their own sort of public brands and personas, right? Like, there are writers we know. Most of them are writer-directors, but, like, everybody knows who Quentin Tarantino is, right? Everybody knows who Aaron Sorkin is. And those are people who, like, you know, had a name, and so they could carry that name with them in negotiations wherever they wanted to go. You know, Ryan Murphy, Shonda Rhimes, folks like that. But I don't know that, like, TikTok or YouTube is going to best serve most writers that I know. Like, we don't need 10,000 screenwriters on TikTok trying to, like, establish followings. Like, some of them would emerge, but I don't think that's good for anybody, least of all them. But I do think that writers are going to, you know, when the strike ends, get back to the grind of writing great stuff. And, you know, in time, because it takes a long time for that stuff to get made, we're going to see great stuff again. I hope that the negotiations and however they're resolved gives writers more power, because with more writer power comes better movies and television.
I guess my next question is kind of just like, maybe for people who are not fully aware of, like, what the writers are asking for, from your perspective, yeah. Is there, I mean, I've seen the list of, like, what the writers are asking for and what the studios want and where they sort of can't meet in the middle. Is there any side? I'm obviously pro writer, but then I'm like, is there anything that the writers are asking, like, too much of? Like, everything seems pretty reasonable, and it seems like even the cut of the pie that they're asking for is not even that much. And
it's not crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, why won't the studios make any concession almost whatsoever? I mean, how long has this strike already been going? It's already been over 2 months, no?
Yeah. I think as of today, it's like 52 days, 51 days, somewhere in there. You know, the last one went 100 days. So, you know, we're still very much in the pocket. You know, look, I think if I was to put myself in the studio's seat and try to imagine why they're negotiating the way that they are. You know, fundamentally, a corporation's job is to make as much money as it possibly can. And so why they're not incentivized to give away anything. And I think especially right now, when a lot of these companies are judged not on their long-term sort of stability or sort of slow growth, they're judged on immediate growth and you know, and their stock price, the people who are running those companies have a real incentive to focus on short-term gains. And so the short-term, giving up a little bit of money is about short-term gains. They don't think, for example, yo, if I give up a little bit of money here, if I sort of establish these AI protections that allow writers to, like, use it as a tool, but not get, you know, not lose out on jobs and money because of it, if I make sure that there are writers' rooms of a suitable size that, like, young writers can get experience to become the big writers whose names we all know now, maybe I'll make a ton of money in the next 10, 20 years and be a hero to the industry. They're thinking, I gotta cut costs, I gotta juice revenue, and I gotta make that stock price pop, because I'm probably gonna be out of this seat in 2 to 3 years anyway, so why am I worried about 10 years down the line?
Yeah, I mean, now you're seeing the, like, who was the executive that was doing, like, the graduation speech and was getting booed
David Zaslav at Warner Brothers Discovery. Yeah,
so it's like, you know, it's, you love to see that. I mean, it's like
it's about time.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where it just seems like an easy, you know, you're on the wrong side of history sort of argument. I mean, I don't get how. You know, the studios are not coming to the table with, like, a good faith negotiation and like really kind of just seeing what you're saying. There is a long term kind of a vision to what the film and television industry should look like when it comes to writers and actors. And it's just very odd. Just like it happened. I mean, we almost, like, don't learn from our mistakes and from the previous strikes. So I think now with streaming. And now, since there isn't residuals like what we've been grown up with shows being syndicated, now it's just like, you know, make the show for my streaming platform, we'll pay you, and then peace, and that just no way to sustain a career if that's going to be the business model.
Yeah, and look, I think the writers will acknowledge, like, the business has changed dramatically. And all they want is a fair piece of the upside of how that business has changed. You know, I think some of this is just competence on the part of the AMPTP. I actually don't think they fully understand, like, capitalism and, like, how the ecosystem works and why film and television matter and how to get good films and TV. I think another part of it is just an unfortunate incentive structure that's making... I shouldn't say it's making them do anything that allows them to make bad short-term decisions, but, you know, short-term decisions that have really bad negative repercussions for their own companies in the long term.
All right.
It's so frustrating, but hopefully this ends soon.
Okay, let's get back to footy, because let's talk about those script writers writing, you know, Major League Soccer, and they were like, you know, jumping the shark, bringing in Lionel Messi.
Right, from strike to strike.
your thoughts on that news, and we'll bounce around to a bunch of different leagues. I want to get your thoughts on a bunch of stuff. But Lionel Messi coming to Miami, how'd you feel about it?
I'm excited about it. Look, and I'm also a season ticket holder at LAFC, so, like, my big question right now is, like, at what price would I sell those tickets? Because that number keeps creeping up, and I'm like, I could afford season tickets for next year if I sell one of these things. I'm excited for it. I actually am less interested in Messi individually coming, but this, like, Messi Busquets Alba trio rolling in, I think is really potentially exciting.
Discount Luis Suarez, by the way. Retiring because of knee injuries. Brazil, but I have a feeling those knee injuries are going to go away in Miami.
Look, you know, you got to get back to that. The doctors in Miami are good. The beach is great. Look, I actually
just
think...
Just don't go to Dr. Miami. You'll get a BBL. That's not what you want, dude.
Louis. Or you can see Franklin's brother.
Yeah.
Suarez is going to show up looking like a completely different man in Miami. I think it's exciting, and I think it will hopefully sort of force everybody else to up their game. I think that it hopefully will drive a ton of revenue into the league. Like, I don't think it's going to get me my eventual wish of promotion and relegation, and I'm not going to, like, inspire the Twitter mob on that one. But, like, I think that there is something really special to be built in a U.S. soccer pyramid, and I think that, like, getting Messi over here is one step along that way.
I think there's so many people.
I'm pro Messi in MLS for sure.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone is against it. maybe Orlando City fans. I can't, the only ones I can think of. But we've spoken to so many people who were not impressed or could care less about MLS, and then especially our friends in LA. It seems like when a team comes into that city and does well, friends in Atlanta, friends in LA, when LAFC came, it sort of shifted their mindset. You know. God, why can't I remember his name now? Ian Edwards was I'm never watching MLS. Why would I watch Division III basketball? Now, huge LAFC fan.
Always at the LAFC game.
Always there, you know. why don't you talk a little bit about how that experience for you, you know, especially someone who first watched it in Europe growing up and now seeing that it's seemingly the level that LAFC has reached, especially the fan base there.
Yeah, I think LAFC has done a really good job with the fan experience. So I think even if you're not that crazy about football, you're going to go to be part of this, like, community event. Like, it's a good day out. And I think that was very similar. You know, I grew up in West Central Georgia, so a lot of my friends live in Atlanta now and became big Atlanta United fans. And they were just like, look, the vibes are incredible. And I think that's a large part of it. I think that, you know, for me, my brother played in the league, so I think I probably had a head start in, like, caring about it. But I wasn't going to Galaxy games once he retired, right? And, like, they're in my backyard. But when LAFC came, I bought season tickets the first year, even though that price tag, it felt like something. But it felt like, oh, I can be invested in this team in my hometown, and I look forward to, over time, you know, celebrating and complaining about how they're performing. And I think people are taking real ownership of that. And I think as the game continues to get better and there are names that people recognize from their various World Cup jaunts once every 4 years, the game will continue to catch on. I also think we're benefiting from a generation of folks. I think we're kind of the first generation that, like, all grew up playing soccer in the U.S., right? Like, my dad's generation didn't really play. They played football, they played basketball. But, like, everybody played AYSO, right? And so now we're all adults. We have some like spare income. It's like, yeah, why would I not take my family to a game in my local city?
All right. Were you at the MLS Cup final?
Yeah, hell yeah, I was. Okay. That was crazy. Yeah, that was probably the best. It was probably the best live game I've ever been to. Not necessarily for like the quality of football per se, but like the drama was unbelievable.
It was so wild.
Right, you couldn't write it. If I got a screenplay that way, I'd be like, this is cute. This person knows football, but like, this is nonsense.
Did you also write The Good Doctor? You know?
If that's the case, you don't go to penalty, right?
The emotional topography is a little on the nose. Like, I see what you're doing here, but no one's going to buy this.
You mentioned a promotion relegation and that being a wish of yours. That you know, it's a topic we talk about a lot. And you know, I think I know where you stand on it, but I want to pivot into the fact that you go to a lot of lower league games in England. I've seen your Instagram, and that is clearly you know the promotion relegation aspect of that of the culture. Their football culture is clearly driving that interest in going to those games. But what is there any particular favorite ground or favorite game that you've attended? And what? What made you, you know, I think a lot of times people imagine the pilgrimage of going to a Premier League game of like, oh, I want to go to the Emirates. I want to go.
Old Trafford.
Nobody says Goodison Park, sadly. But
including Everton fans.
But what is the thing that made you go, I want to go to Luton Town and some of these.
Dag and Red.
I have not been to Luton Town, but that is like. Probably number one on the list for 2023-24. Like, I gotta go to a Luton Town match. Okay, so definitely my favorite. I happened to be in London for, I guess it was the third round of the FA Cup. And, like, one of the bucket list things for me was to, like, go to a lower league FA Cup match and see, like, a big upset. And I realized that the closest match was Boreham Wood, which is, you know, fifth division. And they were playing AFC Wimbledon. We were third at the time in the third round of the FA Cup. And I went. It was pouring rain. And Boreham Wood won 2-1 with like a 88th minute goal in the pouring rain. And the crowd went off. Right. The place was packed. They were going to the fourth round of the FA Cup for the first time in the team's like 100-year history. Like, you don't get moments like that with a bunch of people that you don't know that often in life. And I think for me, like, that's the draw of the lower league ground experience is these are like, yes, it is. And I go to more than my fair share of like the great churches of the game. Right. Like, I just did a run last 2 months ago where I hit Emirates twice. Wembley for the FA Cup semifinal, Barcelona, went to the Arsenal Man City game in Manchester. Like I was a crazy person, but these teams have deep and abiding followings of people that care about whether like how they do, whether they're in the third division or the fifth division or the seventh division, and getting the different flavors of those parks and like that level of devotion, even if you don't have the beautiful, comfortable stadium with the great food and whatever, it's I don't know that there's anything quite else like it on earth.
100%. I mean, you mentioned the food.
Like a human vibes, like crowd connecting to other people sort of thing.
And it feels like people who are wildly dedicated to this club, even though they don't get the TV rights and they, you know, it's not easy to follow. They're still wildly dedicated to it.
Yeah. I mean, I went to a an Everton QPR Carabao Cup match away.
At QPR?
At QPR. And yeah,
that's a good stadium.
Yeah, yeah. It was a really like genuine experience where you feel like, all right,
That was your first Everton match ever.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember we met up for drinks after because I was in London as well. And you had a big smile on your face. You're like, it was awesome. We lost.
We lost in pens.
Yeah.
So the upset didn't go the way I wanted.
Yeah.
But you mentioned food and that maybe the quality of food. Obviously, you've been to a lot of grounds. And the food is always a thing that comes up in conversations amongst us because, you know, we all see, like, footy scran and all that stuff.
Great,
but
yep.
I'm sure you have quite a few pies all over all the different grounds or whatever.
I have.
You do bacon buddies. What's your move?
Oh, I'm definitely a pies guy for sure. Okay. It's one place where I just give myself permission to be a 5-year-old at a birthday party and just eat whatever the hell I want. It's definitely like, you know, whatever pies are available, I'm choosing. That's the direction I'm headed for sure.
Nice.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, we did a bacon buddy in Liverpool.
Yeah. Which turns out it's just bacon on buttered bread.
Let's make it all on bread, on brioche. Yeah.
Not too creative when it comes to, you know, the ingredient list.
Not really my buddy, but I get it. You know,
pies at Goodison Park. But then the fancier grounds have fancier food. Emirates has pretty good
food. Yeah. Emirates has pretty good food. All jokes aside, Tottenham Stadium, it looks like it has incredible food. Mm-hmm. They're trying to draw NFL fans.
Do you support a particular club anywhere?
I think I'm a true neutral, man. Like, I'm an LAFC supporter, obviously, but I think I'm a lot more compelled by players and narratives than I ever have been anything else. Like, one of my friends asked me this, and I gave him my answer, and he was like, so basically you're saying you're just a messy bitch who loves drama. And and he's not wrong. Which is why the MLS Cup was so incredible, because like I got all of the messy drama that a person could want, and it was my team that came out on top. But yeah, no, look, I have really deep affections for individual players and individual storylines. Like, I was an Arsenal fan this year because I just love the idea of Arteta going to Arsenal and then having to, like, you know, literally beat his father figure in order to win the title. I think it's even more compelling, arguably, now that he failed to this time, and we'll try it again. I was a huge N'Golo Kanté fan, so I had a lot of affection for Chelsea for a while. It varies. It really does. Just it mixes. You know, I was a Leicester fan their year, like that. Okay. It just kind of goes with usually some version of an underdog story or incredibly compelling personality.
What do you think about, and Alexis can weigh in on this as well, but what do you think about Saudi Arabia seemingly moving money to get these Chelsea players? Like, I don't understand what
I mean, they print money, so
how is this working out where conveniently every player that Chelsea needs to offload and get off the books, Saudi Arabia's like, hey, we're really interested in that that guy.
Yeah, and we want to maybe loan them out to Newcastle. Right.
What? How do you feel about some of these moves?
I mean, I guess congratulations, Todd Boehly, for finding a corporate partner that will save you from the mess you created. It troubles me. I think I have not had a chance to map out all of the sort of corporate relationships between, for example, Chelsea and Saudi Arabia, right? Like, the private equity firm that I know is invested in Chelsea is also like co-invested in a lot of other investments with the Saudi, wealth fund. So look, this is not, sadly, the only example of such moves in the world of global soccer. I'm also just now like sort of fascinated by the notion of the Saudi League. Like, is it the new China Super League? Is it like something new? Like, what
Super
is there
League
to
is
make
a
of it?
Probably a great way to put it. Actually, frankly, just hold on one second. I got to read our sponsors. Travel to South Korea. Travel to SaudiArabia.com. The Saudi Super League is a wonderful league. No, kidding. I think the funny thing is that, you know, you mentioned it, Clearwater Capital and all these things. It's like, you know, the way money is moved these days, at some point, we're probably just going to have to just separate ourselves from everything that happens
and
just watch the 90 minutes, because that might be the only way forward.
We watch the 90 minutes in silence. No one speaks to each other. No one voiced any opinion.
No, we do not root for anything other than goals.
But I think so here's my other weird take on this, though. Like, right, like, there's so much in our lives that is good but still somehow corrupted, right? Like, on some level, like, America, ideals, love it. Execution, working on it. And I feel like what's sort of fascinating about football is that it is always the sort of like the purest example of all of these phenomena that exist in the world, and then they get sort of like played out through this like game that everyone cares about, and then we have to contend with the realities of like how this thing is, like how this thing that we all love rightly comes into existence. But it's not like this is like new stuff.
Yeah. It's just a. I mean, it's interesting because it's like I think it's also why like maybe Ted Lasso was so successful in finding a way to take this fanatical, almost religious sort of thing and put some humor on it. You know, that's why I think the English didn't embrace Ted Lasso that quickly. It's just like, oh, they hear American. The concept is just like they just assume it's going to be stupid. And you realize, oh, this is a pretty heartwarming story that is actually kind of doing justice to the tradition of the game.
And it's stupid in a fun way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think it gave us like the ability to believe that like somewhere there's a team that is fighting against all of the evil forces that affect the game. Right? Like they're turning down billion-dollar bids for the club. You know, Sam's out there fighting against like Nigerian petro like lords.
it's included everything.
You know, Jamie and Jamie Tart becomes like, you know, the best possible ally and friend on earth, right?
Although the team learned total football in one training session.
Exactly. Like, it's an idealized portrayal of this thing we all love and know does not exist. I actually do think that Jack Grealish is probably more like Jamie Tart at the end of the movie than he was at the beginning, if I had to speculate. This is my theory.
That makes sense. Yeah, there is a... yeah, look, this is a... you know, we can go on for hours. This is a lot of fun stuff. I do want to talk about, you know, we mentioned Blacklist a little bit, but if there's any, you know, you can maybe talk a little bit about Blacklist and let people know what it is for the six people that may not be aware. But the you know, any particular projects and anything that you want to let people know about.
So I was actually trying to think of like how to explain the Blacklist in footballing terms, and here's what I came up with. Where the FIFA headquarters are where exactly?
In Zurich. Remember.
Zurich. All right. So imagine if in global football, to become a professional footballer, you had to move to Zurich and like go to a bunch of tryouts and play at a bunch of games. And then the people in Zurich said, okay, you're dope. You can go play somewhere. You can go play in this team. Right. That's a little bit how Hollywood is organized right now, especially if you're a writer, because like the pitch has always been, oh, I want to be a screenwriter. What do? I move to L.A. I network until someone pays attention to me. And then when somebody who's already in the industry is like, yeah, you're actually pretty dope, then I can get a job. And that's not a good model for finding talent, right?
Like right.
Most teams have scouts. They send people out into the world so they can find some random 5'3" kid who's going to be the greatest of all time. And so really the Blacklist is designed to be like an automated scouting system for writers. So no matter where you live, no matter who you are, if you've got some fire screenplay or television pilot, you can sort of upload it to our website for a small fee and get feedback. And if that feedback says, yeah, this is dope, we'll tell everybody in Hollywood. We're not telling the studios right now because we're on strike in solidarity with the writers. But like, we'll tell agents, managers, producers, actors, directors, like, yo, this is a pretty good script. You should do something with it. And then those people will get in touch with you directly at no additional charge. That's kind of what it is. It's blacklist.com with no vowels, blcklst.com. So if you are a writer or an aspiring screenwriter, at least check us out. And then on that, we are working with Ed Solomon, who wrote Men in Black and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, to do like a writing screenwriting seminar that'll be available on Zoom. It'll be free. We're asking people to donate to the WGA strike funds. If you go to our website or you go to any of the Blacklist social media, just the BLCKLST on Instagram or Twitter, information will be there. And it's dope. And we have some pretty incredible guests. First episode is Lena Dunham and Susanna Fogel. Second episode is Jesse Armstrong, who wrote Succession, Eric Roth, who wrote like The Insider. So it'll be fascinating conversations. And if you want to learn about screenwriting, like, you'll definitely pick some stuff up.
That's amazing. All right. You know what? Yeah. I'm going to join. I'm interested in that. So I'm going to do that. That sounds really, really dope. So, all right. And also,
thank y'all for doing what you do. I'm a fan and I look forward to, wherever y'all pop up, and that's increasingly random spots like the soccer game.
It's what we do best. In fact, look to your left. No, I'm kidding. We here now.
And if you come across any script that requires, if it's a football script or requires two dummies who know a lot about football,
buddy.
How have they not? Here's the big AI question for y'all. FIFA comes to you and says, look, we want to add, sort of more comic, informed commentary, during halftime, we're going to add, but we need to buy, we need your likeness and voice, and we're going to use AI to do it. But it's got to be in perpetuity. But
ooh, so
Cooligans halftime show, Cooligans halftime show on FIFA forever.
I'd say, talk to my agent, MBS.
that might be an optimal strategy, by the way.
Yeah.
Might be the only way out.
that might be the only optimal strategy.
Franklin, Leonard, thank you so much for joining us. Everybody watching or listening, go check out The Blacklist. And again, if you want more information about the strike, there's a lot of resources. Obviously, we mentioned Adam Conover. Franklin Leonard is one as well. But just it's nice to see a footy fan, obviously, in Hollywood. Bigging up the
we
game.
We out here, man.
Yeah, we out here. There's not many of us, but we gotta do the work.
And if you want to know more, watch your TED Talk, How I Accidentally Changed the Way Film Is Made. Yeah, I believe it's correct.
It's absolutely brilliant. All right, Franklin.
1.6 million people watched it. You might as well, too.
Franklin, thank you so much for joining us, man. We hope you're well, and thank you again. Thank you for everything you do, brother. Cheers.
Back at you. My pleasure.
What an incredible interview we conducted with an amazing human being, Franklin.
Yes, the reviews are in by us, and we are pretty amazing.
The
and
most so, important reviews is us.
All the critics are raving about our interview. We're also the critics.
Amazing things have been said about this interview. Alexis Guerrero said, amazing things have been said about this interview.
We're in this endless loop of the critics. But shout out to Franklin Leonard. Look up The Blacklist. Look up a lot of the work that they're doing. If you're a screenwriter as well, maybe that's you could submit something there as well.
So. He mentioned too, they're having a screenwriting seminar, I believe, on Zoom coming up pretty soon. So check out The Blacklist.
That's right. So check that out as well. So a couple quick notes. On Monday, on July 3rd, we have an exciting episode coming up because we have a huge guest flying in all the way from Kansas City.
Kansas City.
Okay. Yes, Dorothy from Wizard of Oz.
Bro, we going to say, homie, you ain't in Kansas no more.
Okay. She's going to be like, everybody, don't make me say it again.
Again? Put a house on top of Christian with his little toes sticking out.
y'all know the classics. No, we're going to be joined by special guest Kevincho!
Oh my fucking God!
That's right. We're going to get him to say that in studio. He is coming in studio. We're going to be doing our show live as well on YouTube, most likely at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Time may change due to whatever, weird stuff.
Card subject to change.
You know how it is, okay? It might not be it might just be Kevin and Miguelito.
We might be in Kansas City. No one knows yet.
Okay, we're going to be screaming about Sporting Kansas City from our homes.
Ramzusi! Just a lot of that.
So he's going to be joining us in studio. We're going to be doing the show live. So please come through. Join us. It'll be a lot of fun. Go crazy in the chat, just like you do on his stream, just like people used to do when we were doing our show live. So we're excited to reconnect with our live audience again this Monday.
And please also, we're doing the live premieres on YouTube now. So when the episodes go out at 8 p.m., jump in. You can chat with all our other listeners like we used to. We won't be able to see what you're saying, but you guys can talk to each other, build that cool
community.
Oh,
we'll see what you're saying.
Exactly. And as always, join the Patreon, patreon.com/soccercooligans. I'm always impressed by the, especially our Gully Squad Slack community.
We get so much love.
Yeah, just and just people showing a lot of love to each other. It's a vibrant community of people.
You made it sound like an orgy. I'm
not gonna lie. Sure, I mean, it's not my business what they
just
do.
Just a vibrant group of people showing each other love.
But there's a
Patreon.
There's a lot of you know, I don't know. Are you allowed to have orgies on Patreon?
I don't think so.
I don't know what the rules are exactly.
Hey, listen, that's just a group. They're just only fans. You know what I mean?
Okay. So join the Patreon. I promise you may not get involved in an orgy. I don't think there's a really, really good chance you will not be in an orgy. So
depends on how much you're willing to pay.
But feel free to do that. We have usually when we have guests, it's an opportunity to ask questions of the guests. So we field questions from our Patreon members. So that's the place to do that. So patreon.com/soccercooligans. Join today. All right. We'll be back on Monday with a live episode on here on YouTube.
It's not going to change, by the way. If you're a podcast listener, it's still obviously going to be up on YouTube because it was live.
Yeah, yeah.
So you'll still get
DraftKings
content Network, no matter what. DraftKings
Network.
Absolutely. Shouts to DraftKings Network. Shouts to Metal, I guess Dan Levitard, whatever you guys want to call each other. shouts to everyone.
we should have like a candle with Dan on it. You know what I mean? Like a little, like a Santeria.
We're one for one. We're one for one on the Santeria with Everton staying up. So
okay, yeah. So
hey, listen, we still have the wax on here, bro. Here, we so still got the candle? Damn, we don't do garbage.
All right, we'll be back on Monday with a really fun episode, so we'll see you then.
Real quick, before we leave, are you feeling this hot shot go travel through your stomach?
No, not really. It's still right here.
Well, you should swallow. All right. What are you, a squirrel? How are you doing that?
Peace, everybody.
It's the Cooligans, buddy.
Love you guys.
Now's the time to start your next adventure behind the wheel of an exciting new Toyota hybrid. With the largest lineup of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electrified vehicles to choose from, Toyota has the one for you. Every new Toyota hybrid comes with Toyota Care 2-year complimentary scheduled maintenance, an exclusive hybrid battery warranty, and Toyota's legendary quality and reliability. Visit your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places. See your local Toyota dealer for hybrid battery warranty details.